Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. I am John Paul, sitting in for David Inge on this Friday morning, and we invite your calls this morning to join in the discussion today. As you consider your lunch, we're talking about a problem of hunger today. Now, you may think the world is winning that war on hunger in Africa. Seems like it's been a while since you've seen pictures of starving people on television or on the front page of your newspaper pleading with the world for some food. And to fight the latest crisis in a country in Africa. And it seems like charitable organizations all over the place have been sending tons and tons of food to starving Africans. But actually, the situation in Africa is getting worse. As we said a few minutes before the top of the hour, more than one in three Africans went to bed hungry last night. And if you add in the African HIV and AIDS situation, extremely high poverty rates, agricultural problems in African nations, you have the makings of a world crisis that just doesn't seem to go away. Well, joining us today on Focus 580 in the studio to talk about African hunger is the international, an international partnership actually has been formed to help solve the situation. And with us in studio is Earl Kellogg of the University of Illinois. He is the Associate Provost for International Affairs and is Chair of the Advisory Board for the partnership. Welcome, Earl. And joining us by telephone from East Lansing, Michigan, is John Statz. Hello, John.
Hello.
You're a professor of agricultural economics, and you also are on one of the fact finders about this African situation in hunger. Is that correct?
That's right. Our partnership put together a technical committee, and I'm part of that technical committee.
Well, let me invite our audience to join in. You can call with questions for Mr. Kellogg or questions for John Statz by calling 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And outside the Champaign-Urbana area, there is a toll-free line for you to call, 800-222-9455. Let's start with what this partnership is up to and how big the problem is in Africa. That's a pretty wide question, but how big is the problem?
Well, I think it's important to understand the partnership by looking at the rationale for why it was formed and why we felt it was important to do this. For some time in the last several years, we've been somewhat concerned about the direction of programs in Africa, as well as the problem seems to be getting worse, as you noted, and that the U.S. Didn't seem to have a true partnership with Africa in this trying to solve it, and it really didn't have a strategy that was working all that well in many cases. And so as we began to look at the U.S. response to this problem, our development assistance activities in rural development in Africa were dropping. The World Bank's agriculture and rural development activities were declining as well. There didn't seem to be an effective strategy developed and so forth. So what we tried to do was to build a partnership among a number of different kinds of institutions. And this partnership is an independent effort. It's not associated with a specific government agency. It's not associated with a political party, although many government agencies are involved in it, and both the Republican and Democratic parties are represented as well. And it's associated with private sector as well as non-governmental organizations, civil society organizations, as well as the government sector. And it's inclusive of people and institutions in both the U.S. and Africa. So we were trying to find a way to better understand the problem, to develop a strategy that we could find more consensus around that would be more effective in combating these serious concerns and issues and taking advantages of the considerable opportunities that are available to us in Africa, and then putting an action plan in place that would actually be implemented and make a difference to people.
John, your perspective on this partnership's role in solving what seems to be an insurmountable problem.
Well, I think one of the things that we tried to highlight was the dual nature of hunger in Africa. We often see, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, the pictures of starving kids and the famines and so on. And that's sort of the visible side of hunger. That's the short-term crisis where a war or a drought combined with some other disruption has kept food from getting to hungry kids and so on. And that's what we see. But that kind of hunger, the famines, affect maybe 3 to 4 million people maximum a year in Africa. So that's sort of the acute hunger that we know how to bring in the emergency relief and deal with that. What's more fundamental is the long-term day-to-day hunger that affects somewhere between 200 and 300 million people in Africa every day. And this is hunger that's tied to poverty, simply not having enough resources either to produce the food themselves or to buy it. And you think about that number, that's roughly three-quarters of the population of the U.S. Being hungry, half the population living on less than a dollar a day. So to put that in perspective, I don't know about Champaign, Urbana, but here in East Lansing, you go out in the morning for your fancy latte, and you're spending maybe $2.50, $3. So three lattes a week, that's the per capita income of about half the population of Africa. So that's the nature of that we were trying to address. This partnership said, you know, the American people have traditionally been very good at responding to the short-term crises and dealing with the famines and trying to get some short-term relief. But we haven't had a strategy in place to really attack the underlying poverty of the folks who day in and day out are hungry, and because of that hunger are more susceptible to disease. Kids can't learn well in school when they're hungry and so on. So that was the aim of the partnership, was to look at the longer-term structural problems of hunger and try to come up with a strategy.
Let's get right to a caller. We have a caller on line one joining us now from a car phone. Go ahead, caller. You're on with Earl Kellogg and John Stantz.
Hello. I have a question. There's a commercial that comes on, I think it's ADM, and they talk about the fact that there is enough food to feed all the hungry people in the world, but the real problem is politics. And I wondered, I wanted to get your opinion on that, that it's not a problem of not being enough food, it's just the political games that are played in Africa that prevent certain people from getting the kinds of food they need.
One of the things we know is that if you would take all of the food produced in the world and you divide it by the number of people in the world, there would be enough calories for everybody to have an adequate amount of calories. But that's obviously not the problem. The problem is involved with people having access to food. We know that there's three different parts to the food problem, and one of them has to do with this whole question of access. And if you don't have income to buy food, even though it may be available, it's very hard to make food available to every hungry person without the income to buy it. Secondly, we know that people have problems with utilizing food, that disease or other kinds of problems keep them from being able to have an adequate diet, even if we have an amount of food that's available. And then the third problem is this quote of whether you simply have enough food in the local area to do that. So the problem is the food's not in the right place, and people don't have the kinds of incomes to buy the food that is on the market, it would be available. And I guess I don't agree that this is all a problem of politics in Africa. There's a lot of fundamental problems in terms of poverty, in terms of market systems, in terms of having ability to move and get access to food, and fundamental poverty that certainly isn't just a political problem.
But I do think the caller raises an important point. There are some places where politics clearly are important. You think about places like Sudan that are in the midst of civil war or the Congo. Those are fundamentally kind of political arguments, but they're political arguments over scarce resources. So you might have poverty driving the politics that poor folks are arguing over scarce resources. The other point I'd make is that since the end of the Cold War, there have been some very profound political changes in many African countries. And we're seeing, not everywhere, but in a number of countries, the emergence of really truly democratic regimes where you didn't have them before. And those countries, once they get those democratic systems in place, are still facing problems of poverty, and those are the places where this partnership initially focused. We initially focused on some places where things are moving in the right direction: Nigeria, Ghana, Mali, Mozambique, Uganda. And even when the politics starts to be working better, you still face those fundamental problems that Earl talked about. And there, I think the U.S. has a lot to offer in terms of technology and ways about learning new ways of bringing food production up in these countries.
The partnership, as I understand it, Professor Stancy, is pretty broad-based here, from corporate to labor unions to foundations and charitable organizations, presidents of university, presidents of African nations. So there's a broad base here, but it still seems like a task that will be extremely challenging, because you're not just tackling the agriculture angle and the poverty angle. You've got all these other elements that need to be resolved.
That's absolutely right. This is perhaps one of the most challenging problems facing the world right now. But the idea of putting together a broad coalition was important, because what we've seen over the last dozen or so years has been a real erosion of support in the U.S. and in other high-income countries for work on the long-term agricultural growth. In the U.S., for example, the money that USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is our main foreign assistance agency, allocates to food and agricultural development, the longer-term problems, has fallen by about three-quarters over the last dozen years. And if you look at all the rich countries, it's fallen by about half. In the World Bank, it's fallen by about three-quarters. And part of the problem there has been that we've been responding to the short-term emergencies. And you've had a number of groups who've really focused on those short-term emergencies, which are really important, you know, problems of child survival, other concerns about protecting the environment, and so on. But what happens in the dynamics of it is that with a shrinking budget for foreign aid, those groups become competitive. And so you have the bizarre situation where the health people say, well, another dollar to agriculture means another dollar less to vaccinate kids, so that's a bad thing. And vice versa, the Aggies are saying, well, another dollar to vaccinate kids is another dollar less for us. Where in reality, these are very complementary. You can vaccinate a child, but if the child doesn't have enough to eat, the child's still going to get sick. And on the other hand, you feed the child, but the child comes down with polio, that doesn't help you. So the idea was to get everybody who was concerned about problems of poverty around the same table and talk about how we can work together to make our programs more complementary and, in a sense, grow the pie. So that we could work together. So that's the notion of the partnership within the U.S. and then partnering with Africans, because, of course, this ultimately concerns them, and unless they are co-owners of the effort, it's not going to go anywhere.
Let me remind our listeners this morning that you can join in the conversation with Earl Kellogg and with John Statz this morning. You can call us from the Champaign-Urbana area at 333-9455-WILL, or outside the Champaign-Urbana, anywhere within the state of Illinois or Indiana, within the WILL listening area, toll-free 800-222-9455. That's WILL. Your mission here is to cut hunger significantly by 2015. Is that really achievable?
Well, I think it is achievable, and in some ways we simply have to do that. And I think one of the things that it's important for us to realize, we have a very different world than we did just 15 years ago. There's been a substantial development, as John was saying, of more democratic and open institutions in Africa. Many countries in Africa now have more flexible and effective economic policies. The world has changed in terms of the political climate. If you remember 15 years ago was a Cold War climate in which the U.S. often linked with African countries for development purposes based on which political leaning they had rather than whether it was a productive country for development assistance or not. So that's changed, and we can now collaborate with countries based on the possibilities of success rather than on which particular camp they've chosen to be engaged with. And the world economy has changed. We have a lot more economic interconnectedness. A lot of people call that globalization. That's a controversial word in many ways. But Africa now has an opportunity to be more engaged in world trade, and they have a more open market opportunity here. There's lots of investment that have to go into African countries to take advantage of that. We also have a lot more technology than we did 15 years ago, particularly in information and communication technology. And we know more about development, I think, than we did back then. And so I think we can be more effective in putting together a broader base strategy. And that strategy essentially is to say we got off base, frankly, several years ago in Africa. We didn't invest enough in the predominant sector of those countries, which is the rural sector. And when you have 60 to 65% of all your people living in a rural sector, you simply have to invest in that sector to see economic growth. And we believe economic growth is important so one can have a larger pie, as John said, to invest in important programs of education and health and so forth. And secondly, that we have to be able to invest in the rural infrastructure. And improve the market roads there, improve the telephone communication processes, improve ability to get an education in rural areas and to have quality health care, and then invest in the major sector of the economy, and that's agriculture and food systems. And if you can do that, you can improve incomes and poverty alleviation in rural areas as well as in urban areas. And I think it's important to think about this as a strategy that assists in the development of urban areas as well, because we're not calling for only a rural sector investment. If you have a rapidly expanding urban sector, which Africa does and which many countries in the world do, you simply have got to have a robust and healthy rural sector, or you're going to find food supplies limited, you're going to find more and more people moving to urban areas, and you're going to have intractable problems there. So this broad-based development in agriculture and food systems that focus on technology and new economic policies and so forth is an important one for the overall economic growth of these nations.
Well, you know, it seems like you guys have a great philosophical approach here, but this is going to take some money. Where do you expect this to come from?
Well, that's a good point. And I think we also want to make it clear that we're not talking only about U.S. government money. We believe it will take more money from U.S. government focusing on food and ag system development, and we're making some progress, quite frankly, in that area. But it's going to take increased resource commitments in Africa by African leadership and African institutions as well. And it's going to take increased emphasis by the private sector, by many of the civil society organizations we're working with, and frankly, our own universities as we look at African problems.
Let's pick up a call from a caller on line one in Champaign County. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, this is all sort of ahistoric, and it's a technical fix. Well, I don't want to prejudice you may agree with some of the points I'll make, but in this milieu, we're inclined to talk fairly ahistorically, except maybe a nod to the end of the Cold War. But what I would like to get at is how the patterns of land use in Africa have been established. And this goes back to colonial days. Cash crops are the thing that take up the best land. This has been established for many years. The World Bank, as criticized by this Council for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.net, if people want to look at some of the documents they did on Africa, the World Bank basically really accentuates cash crops there. Now they're coming away from that a bit. Well, it's even down to the ecology of the area. There was an interesting documentary on PBS about South Africa, a program where they're getting rid of the European trees that were brought in by the colonists because they found that if they cut down these inappropriate trees in a watershed, they actually have more water for indigenous agriculture. And so you can't deny that there's a historic role here, and so I don't think you will, but I think that's an important part to focus on. You can talk a lot about technological fixes and greener green revolutions, etc., but if you don't get at who's using the best land for what, and who's being able to feed themselves and what, there's not going to be any real solution, I don't think. And the World Bank is slowly being persuaded, but they still accentuate cash crops, which, anyway, I think you'll take my point, if you disagree with it, but I'd like to hear some discussion of that, and I'll hang up and listen and see if anybody else contributes to that part of the argument. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
I think the caller makes an important point about the historical heritage that Africa is dealing with. Now, the land tenure situation varies tremendously. It's a huge, huge continent. But surely in southern Africa, you look at South Africa, you look at Zimbabwe and so on, the appropriation by the white settlers of the best agricultural land has led to certain patterns of growth that have marginalized a large number of people, and that's part of the struggle that's going on there right now in terms of the debate in Zimbabwe and in South Africa about land reform. The other point the caller makes is about cash crops, and there I think the evidence is really very much more complex than was suggested. If you look at a number of these countries, you find that in many cases, and this again gets back to the land tenure and who owns the land, but in many cases when you're dealing with small farmers, cash crops and food crops can be highly complementary. And in fact, the places where income growth is greatest is in areas where often you have people growing cash crops as well, because the cash crops bring in resources that allow farmers to get access to fertilizer, some of which they then put on their food crops. It brings in financing for roads, which allows them access to purchase food if they need it in a bad year. It brings in all sorts of other kinds of technologies like plows, animal traction, eventually tractors, other kinds of things that can help them. And we've seen this pattern in research we've done in many, many countries. If you take the case of Mali, for example, what we found in Mali was that about three-quarters of the grain that goes on the market, this is the surplus that people produce beyond what they need to eat for themselves, comes essentially from the area of the country where people are heavily growing cotton, but they're growing cotton in rotation with corn and with sorghum. And there's been a real conscious policy in that country to have an extension program for cotton that also focuses on food crops. So this is a design issue. I mean, you can grow cotton in a way that impoverishes people, but if you design it right, you can have a program that also reinforces food production. So I think it's an important issue how these fit together. I don't think it's inevitable that cash crops make people poorer. And in fact, in many places we're finding in Africa, people are better off if they're combining cash crops with food crops.
Let me take a reminder for our audience. This is Focus 580. I'm John Paul in for David Inge today. Our guest today on the topic of hunger in Africa, Earl Kellogg, the U of I Associate Provost for International Affairs. And he is also chair of a international panel or partnership to help solve the hunger situation in Africa. Also joining us from East Lansing, Michigan today, John Statz, who is a professor of agricultural economics and one of the key fact finders and liaisons with African leaders about this issue as the partnership tries to resolve what really I think many of us would agree is just seems like an insurmountable task. We have another caller who's been patiently waiting on line four from Bloomington, Indiana. Go ahead.
Hi. May I ask about the effect of the AIDS epidemic on African agriculture? I understand that there are large areas of Africa where most of the people in their productive years have died. They've died of AIDS. So that in these areas, there must be a serious shortage of of agricultural workers, people to work the land. There are only children under 18 and grandfathers and grandmothers, but the people in their productive years are gone. How can the land be worked?
This is a really important issue. I don't think you can address the hunger problem in much of Africa without thinking about how AIDS affects it. And you're exactly right in saying that there are some areas where you've lost a lot of the productive population in terms of age groups, and you also have a lot of people who are sick. And this is leading us to point out, and many people in Africa, to realize that we have to rethink agricultural technology. We've often been working on technology that has used a fair amount of labor. For example, some of the more organic fertilizer methods of composting and so on use a lot of labor, and people simply can't handle that now with less labor. So there's a whole agricultural technology agenda that sort of comes along with the AIDS pandemic. There are two other really important ways in which these the problems of AIDS and hunger are linked. One, of course, is that the susceptibility to the opportunistic diseases that come along with AIDS, the pneumonias and so on, your susceptibility to those is greater if you're weakened because of malnutrition. So people may be dying a lot quicker in Africa from AIDS because they're malnourished. And one of the real problems that poses is that in many of these societies, all the knowledge about how to farm is passed on from parent to child through the oral tradition. The parents just tell them how to do it. But if these you need a certain period there where the kids are old enough to take it in. And if the parents are dying when the kids are 8 instead of 12, a lot of that knowledge doesn't pass on. So there's a long-term effect on agriculture of that. The other side is that poverty may be leading to quicker spread of the disease. Many people may have seen the Newsweek article a couple months ago about the AIDS pandemic, and that focused partly on the large number of very poor women and even kids being forced into the sex trade in southern Africa, and they're being driven largely by poverty. If you had more productive opportunities for them in rural areas, a lot of them, I'm sure, would not be taking that option, and of course the broader sex trade just facilitates the spread of the disease.
Thank you for your answer.
And I think it's also important to recognize that and John's point, these are interrelated issues, and that one cannot sort of address an AIDS problem in Africa, nor can you address a poverty problem in Africa in isolation from each other. And one of the things we're trying to do is to bring the different groups together and start talking about how do we work on these things together? In what ways can we be more effective in economic growth and agriculture and food system development at the same time dealing with this very important problem of AIDS? And it's important that we realize that these are not competing efforts. And as John said earlier, in Congress sometimes it comes out that way, that we need to grab a dollar for one thing and take it away from something else, and that just doesn't make any sense given these incredible challenges we have.
Let me ask, you can do a lot of talk and figure out what the issues are. You can do a lot of planning. Your partnership can meet and mm-hmm. hold conferences. What about the action plan, and when do you, so to speak, kick it into gear?
Well, actually, the action plan is being implemented. I think it's also important to realize, and the callers and people listening are welcome to make comments on the strategy. We'll find the strategy on our website, which is www.africanhungeroneword.org. And we would welcome any kind of response to that. If you want to critique the strategy and action plan that's in draft form, you're most welcome to. We had a major conference in Washington on June the 26th and 27th, in which we had African consultations and people from Africa critiquing the plan, as well as people from the U.S. So, but in many ways, the African leadership that was there, we had the president of Mali, the president of Ghana, prime minister of Uganda, and the prime minister of Mozambique, were already informing us that their directions are moving in this way, and there's a couple of major African initiatives in which agriculture and food systems development and economic growth are receiving more attention than they were before. So in many ways, the action plan is being put into place, but there's much to do, and we have a lot of work in this whole area.
And it is not only in the United States that the action plan will kick into gear.
Oh, that's right.
Right, exactly. If I could just mention two precise or specific things. The OAU, the Organization of African Unity, just met in Lusaka, Zambia, and they ended their meeting on Wednesday. And they've created a new organization. They've transformed themselves into what they're calling the African Union, which is roughly based on the European Union. But one of the key documents that they have just approved is called the African Initiative for Poverty Alleviation. And that's a document that drew on a number of inputs, but in there you'll see probably for the first time in a Pan-African document a very strong emphasis on focusing on food and agriculture as a key tool for poverty alleviation, and that was just approved Wednesday. So there's a clear political statement on the African side. The other thing on the U.S. side, we have many, many members of our coalition. One important one is a group called Bread for the World, which is a Christian group that lobbies Congress on these kinds of issues. And Bread for the World has helped put forward a joint resolution in Congress called the Hunger to Harvest Resolution. It's a congressional resolution, number 53 in the Senate, and I think it's 102 in the House. And that's essentially, it doesn't commit more money, but it's a sense of the Congress resolution that says, that calls on the president to make this a major issue in his foreign policy, and for Congress to work towards alleviating hunger in Africa. It has some targets for increased assistance, calling for $1 billion more a year in assistance, not only for food and agriculture, but also for AIDS and education and so on. And that piece of legislation has been approved by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It has over 100 sponsors in the House. And that's something that if readers or listeners are interested in and interested in getting their congresspeople involved, they could go to the Bread for the World website and get more information on that.
John, we have a caller from Belgium, Illinois, who wants to join in the conversation this morning on line 4. Go ahead, caller.
Yes. As cruel as it may sound, isn't AIDS actually helping you in the situation of solving some of the hunger problems in Africa?
I think it's important to deal with. I think your the caller's point is that it's reducing the number of people and so forth. But the economic and the social and the personal costs of this of these death and sickness is enormous. And I don't think any of us are saying that AIDS is in any way contributing to the alleviation of these problems. It's really a major drain on that country, both in terms of its personal family life as well as the economic and social life in that continent. So this is a real difficult situation. I understand, but
no. What I'm getting at, sir, is this. It's that as horrid of a situation as it may be, okay, and I agree with you 100% that it is, but isn't it interesting that nature itself will find a limiting manner for some of the problems we produce on ourselves? In other words, horrid diseases come on in places where there's overpopulation, where there is famine and problems like this. The world will take care of itself in one way or another. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
I think one of the things I'd like to get back to a little bit, and John was referring to, and one of our earlier callers, it's important. I think one needs to have a historical perspective on these issues as well. And John referred to some of the more recent history. But if you look back in the 1700s and 1800s and think about what was going on in Africa with respect to slave trade and all of that sort of thing, that many people in the West, as well as people in Africa, were participating in, and other parts of the world. And then the colonization of Africa by lots of different countries, and the kinds of policies that they put into place to develop the cash crop economy, to make these much more focused on exports rather than looking at internal kinds of development problems and so forth. There's a lot of history here that shapes where we are today in Africa, and that makes the challenges even greater. But I think one can be more intelligent about all of this if one understands that. And I think it's also important to recognize that the world has come to some understanding of the importance of the food crop economy of Africa. There is a group called the Consultative Group for International Agriculture Research, which has a number of agricultural research institutes all over the world, several of which are in Africa. And many of these are focusing on African food crops and looking at the kinds of improvement in quality and yield that one can derive from research and technology there, so people can eat better of the crops that they already eat. So that's one of the major, I think, important elements that's part of our strategy, is to focus on these kinds of internal problems that sometimes gets lost in the privatization and the commercialization that one sees.
Let me invite your calls to Focus 580 this morning on WILL in the Champaign-Urbana area. That number, 333-9455, WILL, of course, and toll-free from around Illinois and Indiana, 800-222-9455. We have Professor John Statz from Michigan State University's Agricultural Economics Program, a liaison with the African leaders for this partnership, and Earl Kellogg from the University of Illinois, the Associate Provost of International Affairs, and the co-chair, or chairman of the advisory committee for the partnership. I guess one of the questions might come forward here. Does the partnership need a marketing plan to sell this project?
We clearly have to think about this very much, and we're in the stage now of developing that. We're going to be dealing with Congress in a more close way than we have before, and that's one of the strengths of the partnership. Is you have a group, as John was mentioning, Bread for the World, an extraordinarily effective group on that issue, and they're part of our partnership. Some of us involved in the research and educational arena aren't as effective at that kind of thing as these sorts of organizations, so the partnership does make a difference there. We also need to be much more effective at reaching various people in all of the institutions represented in the partnership, as well as the American public. And frankly, African leadership and African policymakers and important people in the various African institutions also are going to be increasingly involved in this. So it's clear we need a better or more effective public relations and public information program, and that's something we're working on.
One of the key points that I think we need to help share with the American public is sort of the magnitudes of the resources we're talking about here. There's a perception out there that the U.S. is spending tons and tons and tons of money on economic development, foreign assistance around the world, and it's all going down a rat hole. And I think both the magnitude that people think we're spending is incorrect, and the fact that it's all going down a rat hole, I think, is also incorrect. There were a lot of examples of success. But just to put it in perspective, last year the United States spent $780 million on economic development assistance for sub-Saharan Africa. That's excluding any food aid, but just to try to get the long-term economy moving. There are about 800 million people in sub-Saharan Africa, so that's less than a dollar a person. $780 million. This morning I read in the paper a debate going on in Congress about the B-1 bomber, where the Secretary of Defense has argued that they should reduce the number planned from 93 to 60, so reduce the number of planes by 33, and the dollars they're talking about there, that would imply a budget saving of $165 billion with a B dollars. So roughly 200 times the amount of foreign economic assistance we're giving to Africa on that one item in the defense budget. So we're not talking huge, huge amounts by the amount that, that Congress deals with here. Bread for the World, in its lobbying effort, is calling for $1 billion more a year in economic assistance to Africa. That comes down to one penny per American per day. So I think it's useful for people to realize the magnitudes we're talking about.
And I think we also don't fully understand how little in the aggregate we spend. We know that foreign assistance, development assistance, is less than 1% of the whole budget. So we're talking about very small amounts of money for these kinds of programs that are extraordinarily important.
And in a historical sense, we have to understand that we're doing much less than we used to do. If you look at foreign development assistance or foreign aid as a percent of the U.S. GNP, right now it's about 0.07%, less than 0.1% of our national income goes into this sort of foreign aid. If you compare that to what our country did after World War II in the Marshall Plan, at that point we were sending 2.4% of our national income to Europe. So the generation before us, the folks that were so brave in fighting World War II, were also 30 times more generous in a relative sense compared to the economy than we are today on this kinds of effort. So there is more we could be doing, and I think part of our challenge is to lay out how that could be done usefully, because there's no sense in sending money if it's going to be wasted. But I think the partnership has been quite successful in identifying areas where some additional resources could be enormously productive in helping folks live, have their kids live longer and have more productive lives.
Break this down for me today as to how someone listening today or someone sitting in Illinois or Michigan or Indiana says, I feel in my heart that I want to help.
Yeah.
What can they really do besides send money?
Well, I think there are three things they can do. One, the sending money is important for the things that Americans have always done when there's a crisis or so on, or supporting a lot of the private voluntary organizations like CARE and Catholic Relief and Lutheran World Services, all those folks who are doing good work there. So I don't want to discourage anybody from doing that. Second, I think getting more informed about the what's going on in Congress on this, and there I think one excellent site to start with is to look at the Bread for the World website, which is www.bread.org, because they track a lot of the information going on in Congress on foreign aid and have some wonderful links there. And the third, again, using that same resource and other resources, just to learn a little bit more themselves about the nature of these problems. And there are a number of places that you can do that on the web, so that when their neighbors, when they're having coffee with their neighbors, and the neighbors say, "Well, it's hopeless. You know, we should all just forget about these folks. They're all going to die anyway." There can be an informed response. No, you know, here are three or four areas where things are moving forward. On the political front, it does look like the Bush administration is giving some special attention to Africa. And there is some talk in the Bush administration of taking many of these ideas that we've put forward to the G8 meeting to begin discussion with our partners in Europe and Japan about a broader partnership around the world to help address some of these issues. So there, a letter to a congressman, a letter to the president about your feelings of that this is important could be quite helpful.
We have just a few minutes left on Focus 580 this morning about hunger in Africa. Let's join a caller on line one from Urbana.
I would just like to ask one question which is also related to what you are discussing, and this is the nature of the post-colonial state. Mm-hmm. Where in Africa there is lack of democracy and transparency, mm-hmm. there is proliferation of conflicts everywhere, which also produces refugees, mm-hmm. and more budget is allocated to defense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we also see migration of professionals to the West. Mm-hmm. So in what you are also doing, would it also be possible, you know, to advise governments to adopt democracy, avoid conflicts, and bring about stability so that people would focus on development and production? And isn't this also one important aspect in what you're doing? Thank you.
Well, I think that's it is important that African governments and African institutions be held accountable, as U.S. government and U.S. institutions are as well. And that's one of the things we're really focusing on in this partnership, is to have a true and mature partnership and try to make progress in both places. There's a couple points before we quit I wanted to make sure that I'd like to add to John's response about what each individual could do, and that is, each of us is a part of other institutions. Many of us are part of churches, we belong to institutions, we are part of universities, etc. Each of us can make an input into those institutions and urge them to be more actively and more effectively involved in this major problem. And another point I think is important in Africa to remember are the major contributions and challenges faced by African women. The gender situation in Africa is important. Many of the women are engaged in the primary agricultural production activities, and there's real challenges to both in education of girls and education of women, and reaching women with new information and giving them opportunities for economic and social development as well. And that's extraordinarily important part of this whole package. But it's a great challenge, and I think all of us can be involved in our own ways.
John, we have just about a minute left. Last word from you.
On this caller's point about good government, I think that's extremely important. That is reflected in a lot of what we've written. It's also very much reflected in these new initiatives coming out of Africa, in the plan that was just approved by the African Union. Talks very strongly about the need for good governance and democracy. And frankly, the countries where we're focusing on first are the places that are working in that direction. You can't take these plans everywhere all and expect them all to succeed everywhere, but there are a number of places that are looking very positive in Africa in terms of governance, and I think that's where we should start.
Thank you very much for being with us today. Professor John Statz from Michigan State University, one of the fact finders, I think is a good way to refer to him, and one of the liaisons with the African leaders for the partnership to cut African hunger. And here in studio, Earl Kellogg, the U of I Associate Provost for International Affairs and the chair of the advisory committee for this really newly formed partnership that has quite a task in front of it over the next 14 or so years to significantly reduce hunger in Africa by the year 2015. So we thank you very much for being with you. And again, we'll remind listeners that if you want to know more about this, we encourage you to go to the African Hunger website, this partnership website at www.africanhunger.org. So thanks to you, Earl, and thanks to you, John, for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.